Hi, I'm Chris, an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
And I'm going to do a brief recap, 1 through 9, and then we'll get to 10, 11, and 12. Step 1, I've mentioned before, powerless over alcohol in two ways. Once I start, I can't stop. Once I stop, I can't stay stopped. And I tried to stop many, many, many times, especially like when those really, really bad things happened. I tried to stop, and there were times where I just figured I could, and there were times where I figured it probably wouldn't work because it didn't work all the other times before that. There was nothing special that happened on, June 18th, 2001. I was going to get high. That was the plan for the day. I don't know why that day was different from any other day, and the 11 years after that was any different from the years before that. For some reason, it was my time to get sober, and that wasn't because I wanted to. I wanted to at 14. So they say, you know, this program isn't for people who need it, it's for people who want it. Yeah, it is. Doesn't mean that if you want it, you're going to have it, because, like I said, I wanted it pretty damn bad. And I meet a lot of people here, and they're crying, and they say they can't stop shooting dope up their arm, and they want to stop, and I believe them. And I still believe them when they go out and shoot dope again. You know, I know what that's like. Like, you could pass a lie detector test and still go use again. And that's one of the things that makes me an alcoholic, that no matter how bad it gets, no matter how bad I want to stop, the time and place will come and I'll use again. So that was my experience for a long time. And when I stopped in June 2001, I figured I'd probably use again. There was no reason for me to believe I wouldn't. It always happened. I went off to rehab and I learned a lot about alcoholism, but it wasn't until I had about 2 years sober after wreaking havoc for 2 years, because when you take alcohol away from the alcoholic, you're left with ick, and that's what I was for 2 years. So once I actually found this program and someone introduced it to me, things started to change, and the first step was finally digested, the idea that there was never going to come a day where me and alcohol were going to be able to get along, where I was going to be able to have a couple of drinks with dinner. You know, I wasn't even legal, and I wanted to have a glass of wine with dinner when I got sober. It had never happened, and it hasn't happened since. But when I finally digested that, and I realized that, okay, now I'm 2 years sober, my life's still unmanageable. I can't blame it on all the drugs and alcohol, which was a really good thing to blame it on for a long time. You know, I wasn't really there. I was there. I was really there for 2 years and wreaking havoc, as I said. So my life was still unmanageable, and it wasn't until I really digested the fact that I was screwed, fucked, that I actually decided to try the rest of the steps. And when it came to step two, if you really, really understand that there's nothing that you can do in your own power, then there's really nothing left to do but look for one. Anyone, any power whatsoever. It was left wide open for me. So that's where I started. Nowhere. I had no idea what God was. And I had to put aside the idea that I was going to get it right and just allow myself to start believing. If this is it, if I'm completely wrong and there's nothing after death or whatever, if this is it, if believing in God is going to make this better, why not believe? You know, that was my first like little spiritual experience with that. Like, what am I going to lose if I believe? So I started to believe that that I could be restored to sanity like everybody else around me. I wasn't terminally unique. And the third step I had been stuck on for 2 years, as I've mentioned, it's just a decision. Do I think it would be a good idea to turn my will and my life over to the care? Yeah, I suck at it. So I made the decision. And when we got to that step in the book, it was like immediately followed by step four. There was no break. There wasn't a year between steps. Oh, I love that idea. You know, wait a year. A whole year before you know what alcoholism is. 2 years before you think that there might possibly be something greater than you on this planet. 3 years before you think that maybe you suck at managing your life and you might want God to. 4 years before you shut up and write anything. 5 years before you actually have an honest conversation with another human being. 6 years before you're entirely ready, and you gotta wait a whole nother year, even though you're entirely ready now, you gotta wait a whole nother year for seven to humbly ask him to remove your shortcomings. 8, you wanna make a list for a year. Wait, finally, 9 years sober after you've created, if you're still alive, and you've created all these problems, and now have to make amends for everything you did before you got sober and everything you did after you got sober in those 9 years, you finally sit down, you make amends to some people. 10, you finally start looking at the shit you do now, 10 years later. 11, again, you finally really shut up and start talking to God. And wait a whole nother year also, by the way, now that you have this spiritual awakening, wait a year before you carry the message to another alcoholic and try practicing these principles in your life. Like 12 years before that happens. And I've heard the idea that, oh, you know, it took 20 years to walk into the forest, it's going to take 20 years. No, it won't. No, it won't. You have a map now. You know, you can get out easier. It's a lot quicker to get out of the forest with a map. So, anyway, I was on like three or four-ish. I don't know if I have to really cover anything else, though. Four, I sat down, I wrote this list, and then my fifth step, I shared it with another human being, and I've done many fourth and fifth steps since then because I'm not perfect, and I don't catch everything and admit it promptly. And I also don't, at the end of the day, do a perfect 11-step every day, so shit piles up, and sometimes I didn't even know some stuff existed, and it comes up, and I have to sit down and write an inventory. Six, you know, entirely ready, and it says if I'm not, that I should pray. It doesn't say wait. It just says pray for the willingness and move along. And seven, again, this idea that I can't fix everything, so I actually have to God, I have to ask God to help me, even with my own shortcomings. I can't even fix those. Eight, the list, my sponsor had me do ready now, maybe later, and fuck that. There were three columns. Love that. The ninth step, I told a lot of ninth step stories last week. Nine times out of ten, it does actually go differently than you think it's going to, and that's usually to the good. Sometimes the ones that you thought were going to be easy are the ones that, a lot of mms. Those are the ones that kind of go awry, but that's okay, because as long as you brought yourself there and did what you intended to do, cleaned your side of the street, as they say, you know, the outcome is not my business. So here we are at 10. 10-step promises are my favorite, and one of the promises is basically that we're free, that we're no longer running away from alcohol or hiding from it. And that happened for me around this point, where in rehab I was told to know my triggers. I was told, I was scared of Budweiser signs when I left rehab. I don't even like beer, but I was scared of Budweiser signs. I was scared of everything. I was scared of 7-Eleven. I was scared of the diner. There's bars in the diner. There's bars in the pool hall. I'll never play pool again. I love to play pool. Oh, my God. This is what is going on in my mind as I leave rehab, because how am I ever going to possibly stay clear of alcohol? Like, maybe possibly stay clear of cocaine. That's a little easier to manage, but not entirely. And how am I going to stay clear of something that's part of our culture, you know? And it tells us in the big book that any idea or plan to keep the alcoholic away from alcohol is doomed to failure. It's not going to work, because there's movies with alcohol in it. There's 7-Elevens, diners, everything. It's all over the place. So how am I going to live free if I have to just worry about my triggers? You know, I don't know if I mentioned it here, but trigger, I mean, everything was a trigger. Like, I did coke on the back of toilet seats, you know, the back of the toilet. I mean, am I never going to pee again? I mean, everything is a fucking trigger to an alcoholic. So it was pretty cool when I got to this point. The idea that I don't have to worry about triggers. I don't have to worry about where I am. I just have to worry about my motives. And everything else will fall through. If I'm actually practicing these principles in my affairs, I probably can go anywhere on this planet and just be. You know, I don't have to worry about, is there going to be alcohol there? I don't watch the sweat bead on your glass of champagne at the wedding. You don't twitch anymore when someone's drinking. I don't even notice sometimes when someone's drinking. There was a beer in my fridge. My roommate was dating someone who liked pumpkin beer or something, and someone came upstairs and they were like, why is there beer in your fridge? I'm like, there's beer in my fridge. You know, by the grace of God, like, it's not even noticed. I don't even notice it sometimes anymore. But even if I do, it tells us we recoil like as if from a hot flame. And it also has this idea in those promises that this came automatically without any effort on my part. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I just did like 9 steps. You know, that's an effort on my part. And she's like, yeah, but is there any way that's not what made it happen? You doing those 9, 10 steps, 11 and 12, are what gets you to God. And God, without any effort on your part, makes that happen. So that really started to happen for me also, that I wasn't in constant fear of alcohol. When I left rehab, like I said, very, very fearful I was going to use, which may be a healthy fear at first, because it kind of admits that I don't know what I'm doing. The person who leaves rehab and is like, I'm never going to use again. Psh. That person I'm scared for. the person who's a little concerned about using again, that's something that we can work with, because if you think you got it, then I hope you're not an alcoholic and that you got it, because there's some people that can stop or moderate when bad things like having to go to rehab happens. That wasn't me. I was very, very scared when I left. So for 2 years, like I said, I lived in fear, and it wasn't until I did this work that that I got these promises in my life. And the 10-step can be really, really uncomfortable. You know, you just screamed your head off at someone, and you are correct. You are right. And you realize that the way you said it wasn't quite right. And so you need to turn around, put aside whatever it is you actually were upset about, and say, I'm sorry for the way that I spoke to you. That's uncomfortable, you know, especially when you know you're right. So I attempt to have to avoid the 10th step sometimes, which could be a good thing or a bad thing, but it is very uncomfortable. And it's something that when it pops up, I need to pray really hard in order to be able to go right back to that person at that moment. And I think one of the most poignant 10 steps I made was I had a sponsee. It was actually the same sponsee I mentioned last week. This was one of the times she didn't get sober. We were at a hospital, and she was willing. I had gotten there after she already went in and then decided she didn't want to go. And she was willing to go into the inpatient at that moment. Okay. So I run in, I'm like, she's ready. And the nurse is like, you gotta go through like the whole thing again, honey. And I was like, what? No, she's ready now. Like, I started screaming at this woman, telling her, you don't understand, there's like a window of like 10 minutes we got here. She's ready, you already did the paperwork. No, we gotta do it all over again. Mm-mm. So I started screaming at her, and I went outside, and she came outside, and she was looking at me, and I turned around, I started crying on her shoulder. I was like, I'm so sorry that I yelled at you. I had to let her know that I knew that the way that I handled the situation was wrong, and it was literally within like 2 minutes, and it's uncomfortable. And I cried on this woman's shoulder that I was just screaming at. Anyway. The 11th step, I was kind of confused about. It really does tell us exactly what we need to do. So after prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, it tells you if you don't know how to pray, just pray for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. It can start there. That could be your prayer. I remember going to my sponsor's house, and her husband's also in the program, and I was asking them about what they do for their 11th step. Like, how do they expand? And, you know, the idea of the big book just being our basic text came up, that it's not the be-all to end-all in spirituality. It's how to get sober, but now the 11th step is wide open. That's where the world opens pretty wide. And her husband brought me over to his bookshelf, and he's looking at all his books. He's going to give me a book, and he pulls one down, and he's looking at it. He's like, here, read this. I was like, you know, there's like a spiritual person's name on it, a religious person's name will say, uh-uh, not. You're lucky I'm open-minded, I said. And I took the book, and he goes, no, you're lucky you're open-minded. Read it. Let me know what you think. And it was really good. It was a really good book, and it was the beginning of my mind opening to, as the big book says, you know, see where religious people are right. You don't have to believe in the entire religion. There's some good shit in those books if you just put aside the things that you don't exactly agree with. It's pretty cool. And, you know, over the last 9 years or so, you know, I've been doing that, and I ask other people what they do, and I try to get creative with meditation. I mean, you can meditate while drumming, dancing, writing, drawing, painting, or you can sit in full lotus, you know, whatever it is that floats your boat. You don't have to do yoga and sit in full lotus position to meditate. So I like to point that out, because some people think, well, I don't dig that, or I can't bend that way, so it's done. That's not necessarily meditation. And the 11th step is something that, you know, I really do try and do on a daily basis. The big book gives us guidelines, if we want, for the morning and the evening. And in the morning, it tells me to wake up and ask God if my plans for the day are kind of jiving with His. And, you know, when I'm confused, I'm supposed to relax and take it easy, which is the exact opposite of my first instinct, which is to, you know, just go crazy and figure it out right now. I'm supposed to relax and take it easy and let it come when it's supposed to. Ask God for some guidance, and if it doesn't come right away, it's not supposed to right away. And then at night, I'm supposed to review my day, and that's, I hear some people call it like a 10-step inventory in the evening. You know, it tells us to kind of look through our day. Where was I inconsiderate? Where was I selfish? Oh, the one that always gets me still to this day is, was there something I should have shared with someone at once, you know, that I didn't share? I mean, I'm a girl. You know, what's the matter? Nothing. You know, that one gets me all the time. Probably should have shared it before the 30-minute fight we had about how I wasn't sharing something. So, the 11th step has become something pretty standard in my life, and I try and do those guidelines on a daily basis, but you can do it any way you want. They say they just don't want to lay down any rule of any kind, but if you don't know where to start, it's a good place to start. I think it's on 86 and 87 in the book. It's wherever the 11th step is in the book. And the 12th step, there's two parts, and there's actually three. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, comma. If you have not had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, aka if you have not done them, you might not want to try and carry the message of these steps to someone else. Oh, I'm ahead of him. It's fine. No, it's not okay. You know, I shared that my sponsor, like, yelled at me when I was going to go take on a sponsee. I had over a year, you know. Okay, I'll take you on. Called one sponsor, the kind of easier one. And she was like, that's great. I think it's a really good idea. And I was like, cool, all right. So I called the hard-ass one, and she, you know, she yelled at me and said, what do you have to give this girl? You're not on 12. Nuh-uh, no way. And I had to call this girl and say, I can't sponsor you. My sponsor said I can't. And I really see why she said it, because I really wasn't ready to carry anything to anyone until I had it myself. So that's kind of the first requirement of the rest of step 12. Carrying this message to alcoholics is something that I try and do on a daily basis. You know, that's why I'm here right now. It's part of my 12th step. That's why when someone calls me and says, hey, are you available for a 12th step call? If I'm really somehow not available at all, I'll make some calls and make sure that someone gets there. But more often than not, I am. And I can move things around and go do a 12-step call. I can meet with my sponsees once a week. I have one sponsee. She's not my sponsee anymore. I've gotten fired tons of times, by the way. I've never fired a sponsee in my life. In the big book, it tells us the exact opposite. It says that this guy was using, and he kept using, and he used half a dozen times in a row. And each time, we hung up the phone because he didn't want it. No. Each time, we worked with him. So that's what I'm supposed to do when my sponsee goes out. And she comes back and says, I went out. What's wrong? Why isn't this working? I was supposed to sit down and actually talk to her about that and try and see where her crazy thinking went awry and kind of point out how it happened way before the drink. And maybe, you know, she may have been on step four, starting step four, but maybe she's really not understanding that she's an alcoholic, and we kind of got to go back and drill that in a little more. I don't remember where I was before that because I know I went on a tangent, but I do. I meet with my sponsees as often as I can. Sponsee, she's not my sponsee anymore. She was like, you know, our schedules really don't match, and like, you know, you're not really available. And I'm thinking, like, I'm not available if you don't call. You know, she never called. She never wanted to meet up. Every time we were going to meet up, she had other plans. She had to push it off, and then I'm not available. I thought that was very interesting. Meanwhile, I had another sponsee sitting right next to me, and we were like, you know, I am available. It's difficult sometimes, but this is the easier, softer way. I had another sponsee years ago who, you know, she basically said, like, this was annoying, and that she didn't really want to do this anymore, and she wanted to just not drink and be normal. And I was like, you know, me, don't we all? I mean, I guess it would be easier if we didn't have to do this work. But for me, it's either live miserably and or drink, or do this work. There's like no in-between of not drink, live happily, and not do this work. It just doesn't exist for me. So she took that chance, and she went and decided to do this. And part of me, like, just the smallest part of me was like, you know, this is a pain in the ass. You know, I have to do this every day. It would just be easier if I didn't have this stuff going on in my life. I'd have so much more free time. You know, she's still to this day not doing so hot. She's a heroin addict, and, you know, she eventually went back out, even though that day she said she didn't want to drink, she just wanted to be normal, and you know how we talk ourselves into that. And you know, I think it was around 4 years I had, and that was the first time, like, I had that dip in morale, right? Like, I don't know if I want to do this, and, you know, she definitely reinforced that for me. And in the years that I've been sober, there have been a lot of dips. It's not always like, you know, yeah, I'm sober, sponsees. You know, there's times where I'm like, I hope she cancels, because I'm not perfect, you know? That happens. But I do have, I try not to say no when someone asks me to sponsor them, and if I can't sponsor them, I hook them up with someone who can, someone who I know takes them through the work the same way I do, just so I know that they're afforded the exact same thing if they sat down with me. But I usually don't say no because I've always noticed that, let's say I have like 6 sponsees and someone asks me and I'm not 100% sure, and I take them on. It's sad, but it always works out, if I could just put it that way. There's always someone else who's not willing to do the work, and she just kind of floats into their spot. It always works out, so I don't really question when a new sponsee comes into my life. I try to make it work. I work with some over the phone, because I live all the way in Huntington, and not everybody lives in Huntington. Not everybody has cars. So that's what I try to do. I don't think that there's been a time where I didn't have a sponsee since I've been sponsoring. And I'm lucky. You know, I've been lucky with that. There's a whole other part of step 12, which I think people leave out. The idea of practicing these in all my affairs. I mean, 12 covers every single step we've talked about. You know, if I'm actually practicing 12, I really only have to practice 12, because 12 implies 1 through 11. You know, and the idea that, you know, I mentioned earlier, like, oh, between 11 and 12, wait a year, you know, I would die. This is something that I absolutely have to do. I have to carry this message to other alcoholics and try and live this way. Otherwise, my life goes to hell, and so does everybody who has any investment in my life at all. I don't have to be drinking to be wreaking havoc in people's lives. I don't have to be drinking to ruin mine. And the fact is that if I don't do this work and if I don't carry this message, I truly believe that I will be drinking soon enough anyway. You know, it would almost be easier to drink in a state like that because it's difficult. And I've mentioned that, you know, in the years, like I said, I haven't always been, you know, gung-ho about this process. And there's been times where I've gotten spiritually sick with the idea. And, you know, I don't think that time really gives you much except maybe a little time. Time sober kind of gives you this time to get close to God and then maybe a little time before you actually get to the point where you drink again, because I have a pretty good connection with God as a result of this work. So it's going to take a while to get that connection to break. And when I did get sick, and it was about 2 years ago that I got the sickest I've been sober, and it was really, 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 really uncomfortable and painful, I had time, you know, which was unfortunate because I suffered a lot, but I really feel like it's because of the work that I had done prior that that I didn't use. And, you know, I shared with my sponsor at the time, like, I don't think I should be sponsoring anybody. I'm absolutely out of my mind right now. You know, she's like, well, you're uncomfortable with certain things that are going on in your life. She's like, isn't that maybe a sign that you're going to get better? I mean, if you were just comfortable with this stuff and it wasn't an issue, there'd be no problem. But there's an issue. You're not comfortable with it. So what are you going to do? You know, you're still sober. You still have to carry this message. And I did. And I had 2 sponsees that were like, F you, I don't want what you got. And then I had 2 that stuck with me. And the 2 that stuck with me are still sober today by the grace of God, because it doesn't have to do with me. You know, as long as I just go, I carry the message. And by sponsoring other people, I continue my program. If I stopped sponsoring people, I don't know what would have happened. But they were willing to work with me, and I'm willing to work with anybody who's willing to work with me. You could be, you know, you could have used yesterday, do some work for a couple of months, use, you want to meet again, let's meet again. You know, I have people ask me a lot, like, oh, my sponsee, like, this is the first time my sponsee used after starting the work. And I was like, really? You're very lucky. Because it happens a lot. And, you know, I have experience with that, and I share it. But the fact is that I don't, just like with the 9th step, I don't have any idea what the outcome is going to be. I don't have an idea what the outcome is going to be with my sponsees either. And I don't get to pick and choose who stays sober. And that sucks sometimes. Sometimes people remind you of you. You kind of have like an extra liking for them, and sometimes they don't make it. I went to a wake a couple of weeks ago. It was a 22-year-old girl. She overdosed, and it was terrible. And I had a sponsee pass away 2 years ago. She was 32. And that's just the two people that I attempted to work with. I can't tell you how many other wakes and funerals and shivas I've been to since I've been sober, because this disease does kill alcoholics and addicts. And the fact is, there's a solution. So everyone in this room, you can't say you never heard it. But unfortunately, just hearing about it isn't good enough. Reading it on the wall isn't good enough. We actually have to experience it. And I'm hoping that maybe from listening to me and from the other alcoholics you have heard and will hear, you know, in your time sober, that maybe you'll be convinced that this is a good thing to try, because we do pass away if we don't do this, or we live miserably. Some of us survive and live miserably, and it doesn't have to be like that. You don't have to be scared of alcohol. Think about it. You know, if you're struggling right now, if you just didn't have that annoying need to use, if it just wasn't up your ass all the time that you needed to use, wouldn't you just not use? Like, why would you choose to make everybody in your life worry, to make your life miserable, to make yourself unemployable? Why would we choose that? We don't. We don't choose it. It's because we have to, because of this voice that won't shut up, because of this feeling that I can't stop unless I just use. So I'm saying that it's possible for that to go away. And that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Goosebumps. That's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not that I haven't drank in 11 years, but that I'm not craving a drink. I don't want a drink. And I'm an alcoholic. That's the miracle. So with that, we'll open it up.